Welcome to Meet on Azure. My name is Daniel Egan. I'm still here on the Caltech campus, and I was able to, after getting Nuri to talk about replica sets, I cornered him and said, I think the people that are viewing this series would really like to understand sharding a little better. So Nuri's gonna show us all the intricacies of sharding in MongoDB.
Hi, my name is Nuri, and today I'm going to talk to you about sharding. MongoDB uses sharding for scalability. For high availability and durability, you use replica sets. But the way to scale when you have way too much data and not enough hardware is sharding. So what's the scenario we're talking here about? You have your data, and all of this data has to fit within one machine. Well, one day you're going to run out of machine. You can buy more memory, but there's a limit to that. You can buy more disk, but there's a limit to that. There's also a limit to the number of IOPS you can do. So when you have rapid fire queries and a lot of data ingestion, well, you'll just run out of machine. So how about we take all of this humongous data, terabytes, petabytes of data, and instead of storing it in one logical large database, how about we just chop it up? We'll take A and B and put it on one machine here. And we'll take B and C and we'll put it on another machine. And we'll take D and E and we'll put it on another machine. So with relational databases, this could be a problem. Because if you think you had a table and it had relations to other tables, foreign keys, that'll be very, very difficult to scale. But with MongoDB, since there are no foreign keys, and every document is self-contained, and there is no foreign key to any other documents within the same collection or in any other collection, this becomes really easy. So this is what sharding is in essence. We take a logical space of documents, a Mongo collection, and we chop it off horizontally and spread it across machines. So now, if I wanted to scale my writes, this mechanism lets me do it because as new documents come, they get spread across these databases. So instead of having one database take all the writes, and this guy runs out of connections or can't keep up with it, now I have all of the writes spread among them, thereby increasing my overall cluster capacity. Kind of the same thing for reads, maybe less pronounced, but if I had to read data that resided only here, I don't have to bother all the clusters. So I can be reading data from here and in parallel some other client reading from here and so forth. So my sharding infrastructure supports higher scalability for both reads and writes. You can choose and tune how it works, and we'll talk about this in a bit. So we started off with this data, these documents, and they're A, B, C, D, E. Let's say that this A, B, C, D is the key, right? Each document had a key, maybe it's a country code or a phone prefix or something. And the question is, if we're sharding, if we're spreading this data across all of those different MongoD instances, how should we spread them across? Well, that's called the shard key. For every collection that we want to shard, we have to define a shard key. The shard key is simply a field or a bunch of fields that define what is going to be used to determine which machine it's going to be located on. So if I wanted to know where a particular document is, well, that key, that shard key, helps me figure out which machine it's on. How does Mongo determine which machine the document will be on? It takes the shard key and it defines ranges. Say A to D live on machine A, and E, F, G live on machine B, and so forth. So those are called chunks. Rather than storing all the keys in one big fat table and then figuring out for each key where it lives, it takes chunks of keys and assigns those chunks to different shards. So if I want to write a new document and it has, say, the shard key A as well, well, it can look over the chunks and say which chunk covers the range that this shard key is contained within, and then hop over to the machine. Now, as a client that is interested in connecting, well, before that, let's ask ourselves, where is this information? The documents themselves are stored on each shard, but we don't really want to go and scan all the machines and ask, hey, do you have that data? Do you have that data? So those chunks have to be stored somewhere. That somewhere is a config server. It's the idea of a database that holds those range definitions, those chunks. And in MongoDB, that's simply another instance of MongoD, the Mongo server, that holds the chunk definitions. It's a config server. It holds configuration information. It knows about those server instances. It knows about the chunk ranges. We tell it what is the document key that we're going to use, what fields within the documents to use as a shard key. So that's our config servers. In the past, config servers used to have a different protocol. With 3.2, they've upgraded to using Raft protocol. And the config servers is not just one machine. It's a trio of machines, three machines in production you want to run for configuration. And they're actually nowadays using a replica set arrangement in order to hold the configuration durable and highly available. Because it's a big cluster, you want that data saved and you want it to be high availability. So we store this chunk information in the config server. But do we want every client to contain logic that has to go and consult the config and read tables or configuration info or collections and figure it out? No, we don't really want to, right? All we want is a connection string, and we want to be able to shoot, you know, new documents at it or shoot queries at it and have it return results. So in the middle, what we do is we put a Mongo S. Mongo S is a separate process, and Mongo S is the router. Mongo S is the one that talks to the configuration servers, and clients don't even need to know that Mongo S is not a MongoDB. As far as your client software, it is blissfully unaware that there's any sharding going on. It simply connects to Mongo S, and Mongo S figures the rest. So you shoot a query and you say, hey, give me all of the people whose name begins with A, or give me people whose name is greater than Alfred and less than Amanthanon. I don't know what name starts with M. Anyway, so you give it a name and in the query, and Mongo S says, okay, well, I see this shard key in here. Let me go consult the chunks. And then it routes your query to the appropriate MongoD server, one of those shards. Now, the records, the documents, are not duplicated. The documents are only stored within the shard. So if this is the chunk said that this shard contains the letter A, then those documents will exist here. There won't be copies elsewhere. So when you specify this key, there's a high chance that this query will only go to one machine. If you specify a range query that spans multiple shards, Mongo S is smart enough to send your query to multiple of them, take the results together, and return it to you as if it was just one stream. So again, the client, your client application, does not need to know about the sharding. Mongo S manages the metadata here, the chunk information, the sharding information. And in fact, those machines, these shard servers, each one of these doesn't know necessarily that it's a shard server. It's simply a database that simply holds data. And it just happens that if you look in the data here, it has the A's and the B's, and here it has the D's and the C's and so forth. But these machines do not actively participate or coordinate between them. The router, Mongo S, does all of the heavy lifting for you. So what's our goal in sharding? If we had a problem of scale, namely that this data set became really, 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 really large, we want to reduce our I/O. We want to have less work borne by each of the MongoD servers. And this scales horizontally. I can have 1,000 of them. So that means that when I pick a shard key in order to locate those a document across these, I have to pick a good shard key. Well, Nuri, what is good? Well, that kind of depends. I can tell you what bad is. Imagine that I took an ever-incrementing number. Let's say I had a lot of data coming in at a very high clip. I had internet hits on Super Bowl Sunday or something. I don't want to pick, say, the date and time or an ever-incrementing numbers. Why is that? Well, remember those chunks, those ranges? What Mongo is going to do is it's going to say, hey, I'm going to create a new chunk for you. And whenever this chunk fills up, I'm going to create a new chunk. So I start filling from, you know, Sunday at 12 a.m. And I put in 12, 1201, blah, 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 blah. All of those fit in one chunk. Therefore, they'll be magnetized to one of the shard servers. So it's going to take all the write hits. And these guys are going to be sitting idle. At some point, this chunk may fill up. And then another one will be the victim and will take all of the fury of writes. So when you want to scale up writes, using a monotonously increasing shard key is not a great idea. Another thing you should consider is whether you're sharding because you are very write heavy or you're sharding because you want to have faster reads. Now, you want faster everything, but at some point you want to optimize towards one scenario or the other. So let's talk about reads for a second. When I pick a shard key, I want to pick a shard key that for the documents in this collection, I can pretty much find them on one server. That increases the chances that MongoS will send my query and only bother one machine in order to satisfy it. Sure, it's capable of clubbing together information from several shards and returning it to you, but that's more work. So to reduce the number of points of failure and to reduce the work that all of them have to do during read, I want to have data locality. So if I have a customer name as the shard key, say, so I'm asking about customer Bob, I want to find all the data on Bob in this one shard and the data about Sally in a different shard. Or the same shard, doesn't matter. Over time, with a large enough data set, you should have more even distribution of workload when you pick a good shard key. Another thing to know about shard keys is that they're kind of extra crispy and you can't change them. Once you define that a collection will be sharded, you cannot unshard it. Once you picked a shard key definition, you named which fields participate in the shard key, you cannot change that definition. Once you wrote a document, you can modify the document, but you cannot modify the values within the shard key fields. So that becomes a very, very important point. You have to pick a shard key that will give you good distribution on reads or on writes or on both. You have to pick a shard key that you know the data in there won't change much or ever. If you ever wanted to modify the values in a shard key in a document, you'll essentially need to delete it and then write it again with the new values, which is not atomic. You will have to do two transactions in order to do that. So picking a shard key is not always easy, and it's really, really worthwhile spending time in figuring out your query workload, your write workload, and seeing how you can design your sharded cluster to serve those scenarios best. There's not really one good answer. It's really what works for you. But you should be aware about the limitations, the immutable shard key, and you should be aware that you don't want to create hotspots. And you should, as much as possible, you want to have query locality, namely that when you read data, it comes from one shard versus having to scan over all of them. Now, not all collections within your database have to be sharded. It's quite okay to have a bunch of collections that are not sharded, and one of them, the main workhorse, the one that grows to terabytes and petabytes, that one is sharded, the rest are not. So where do they live? Well, within a sharded collection, one of the shards, and I call them shards, they're just MongoD servers, one of the shards is going to be declared the primary shard, and all unsharded collections are going to live on that one machine. Now you might think, oh, that's extra load. True, but it's not so much extra load that you wanted to shard that collection. If you wanted to shard it, if it's too much pressure, yeah, shard it. If it's not really that big, well, you know, the extra load is not going to be that salient, and you can just let it live on this one primary shard. So, two more things. I mentioned chunks, and those chunks are defined here. It's actually MongoS that manages the chunks, writes them, splits them in the middle when they grow too big, and moves them around. For that reason, an application should never connect directly to one of the shards. Always do all your operations against MongoS. It's the guy who knows how to do it. Now, this doesn't need to be a single point of failure. You can install many MongoS processes on all your application servers. You'd have to worry about how many connections and stuff like that at some point, but you can run many of those. MongoS is stateless. It does not contain any data, and a lot of people run MongoS process on the same machine they run their apps so that they enjoy the local loop TCP connection, and that hop is pretty much rock solid. There's no network card issue that can ever arise. And since it's so lightweight and does not hold any data, that's not really a problem. Another thing I wanted to mention is that the chunk migrations can happen as long as MongoS can determine a split point in chunks. So when we're picking a shard key, we want to pick a shard key that has very high cardinality, a lot of possible key values. So beginning with the letter A, not that great. At some point, all the Johns and Jonathan and Joseph and Jojo and Julie and all of those are going to be very, very large. You'll have all the documents sit here, and you can't split J in half. So you want to give it a shard key that is wide enough so that there's a lot of variety on it, so that MongoS can find a splitting point within chunk and move it. If Mongo is not able to determine a splitting point within a chunk, it can't make the range, find another middle point within the range, it will leave that chunk alone and it will become a giant chunk. Giant chunks are not movable. So if you run into the scenario, one of your host machines will start having this giant chunk that cannot be split anymore, all the load will go to it, and MongoS will be helpless. It won't have any chance of moving part of the documents elsewhere because they're defined within this range that's unsplittable. So that is really one of the toughest thing about running sharded replica sets. There are all of these things about the shard key choices and the internal mechanisms. It's really nice that MongoS takes care of everything for you. It splits the chunks. It moves them around behind your back. You don't have to worry about it. You don't have to do anything manual. Your application is oblivious to this whole thing. And you can add machines. As you have more and more petabytes, just add machines and it scales out linearly really nicely. But you'll have to spend some time understanding and investigating what is the best shard key I can be using for this sharded set. So this is, in a nutshell, what sharding is, how the mechanism works, and that's really MongoDB's best way of scaling out is using sharding. Remember, replica sets are for durability and availability. Which brings me to one more thing. I said that a shard is just a MongoD process, a single one. For production, since there's only one copy of your document, it doesn't live on all of them, usually what we do is then have every shard be backed up by a replica set. Rather than having a single MongoD, we create a replica set, and a replica set, and a replica set, and so forth, so that we get the high availability and durability, right? So we're leveraging replica sets for the availability and durability within the shard, and the sharding mechanism as a whole for scaling out your data and allowing you many more operations, storing much more data, much more concurrency. So this is it for sharding. Thank you very much.
In a world where no single database could hold all the data, he was using sharding. Sharding!